Today on The Balanced Word, we take a look at Genesis chapter 6 and the flood.
You have one good guy left. That's it. How do you save humanity for the future? How do you do that? How is it that you will ever be able to have a culture created that could then, God could be born into that culture and become one of us, ultimately live a perfect life and die for us, and then crush the head of Satan forever? You can't do that without people. And so God had to do something desperate, and his solution was what we call the flood.
Wake up my soul, wake up early in the day, wake up my hands and the instrument I play, wake up my voice, let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Even a casual observer can see that this world is a real mess. Evil is on the rise. People, by and large, are living for themselves. And one can't help but wonder when God will step in and put an end to it all. Today on The Balanced Word, we recall a day much like our own when God did judge the earth. In essence, he said, I'm going to have to put an end to all of this and start over. Of course, I'm referring to the flood in Genesis chapter 6. But there's great hope to be found in this chapter too. And Pastor Dave Rolfe will touch on that as our Through the Bible in Story series resumes. Here's our storyteller, Pastor Dave.
Well, today we are beginning the next story. As we're going through the Bible, we've talked about creation and we talked about how things got messed up. And today we're going to look at the flood, Noah and the flood, the guy with a bunch of animals in a boat that saved humanity. Now, there are a few stories in the Bible that are more familiar than the story of the flood. And yet, there are a few stories that have more ridicule and are more doubted than the flood. And so I just want to say right off the bat, my bias, when I approach a story that the Bible tells, I assume that it really happened, unless there's a really compelling reason why it looks like it was intended as a parable. And so I don't just come in and go, this happened exactly the way it says, no matter what. I try to look at it and ascertain that. Now, in this case, I understand there are some things about the story that you might go, that sounds crazy. Things like the whole world being covered by water, things like animals getting in pairs and coming onto the ark and things like that. I understand why that might be problematic. And you may even have studied enough history to know that most civilizations, most cultures have a flood myth in their background. And so you go, oh, they're just making a story just like the Babylonians and everyone else did. Now, some of these things can be seen both ways. For one thing, you're not going to make up something that's ridiculous and try to pass it off as truth. Also, the fact that every culture has had a flood myth might make you wonder if there wasn't a flood back there somewhere that they all told the story that it was passed down. But as we look at it, I'll try to explain to you that it's not nearly as ridiculous as it might first sound. I believe this story actually happened. I see it as being very plausible. But at the same time, if you just go, it's just a fairy tale, well, that's okay with me. I don't care if people agree with seeing the Bible the way I do. I'm just telling you how I see it and what's reasonable for me. And you can choose to take it any way you want, but at least look at it and listen to the story and see what's there for you. Now, the story starts in Genesis chapter 6, and it starts on kind of a weird thing, and it's a controversial passage. I'm not going to put a bunch into it. The whole point is, man, was the world really messed up? But where it starts in Genesis 6, verse 1, it says, came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose. Not anything too weird about that, but he goes on and says, the Lord said, my spirit will not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. And then there were giants in the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God came into the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. Those were the mighty men who were of old, men of renown. Now, hang on a minute here. This is one of the passages, these four verses, that you get questioned about constantly, because it doesn't really say exactly what it means. Who are the sons of God? Who are the daughters of men? What do they have to do with giants? Why is this so bad? So there are different interpretations of this passage. Now, what makes it so funny is that one of the major potential interpretations of it that's very old is that the sons of God were here actually fallen angels, demonic creatures, who came down and had sex with human women. And then they had this hybrid race, half demon, half human, and they became giants, and that was what the flood was all about. There are other possible explanations of this. It could just be talking about the fact that as the population grew, problems persisted. It also could be that people who were from the righteous line of Seth ended up intermarrying with people who were really heathen and pagan. So I don't know what it means, to be honest with you. Not sure. But for me, one of my rules of hermeneutics is if there are several different possible interpretations of a passage, I don't go with the one that sounds just totally crazy to me. So I'm doubting the whole demons and human sex monster thing. It could be, I don't know, but I think that there are other explanations that work fine with this passage as well. And besides that, there are some things that really mitigate against that position. For instance, Jesus says essentially that angels are sexless beings, and so it would be pretty hard. Plus, it says there were giants in those days, but it says there were giants later too. So the giants weren't necessarily the fruit of this hybridization, genetic engineering, and all that kind of stuff. Also, if that was the case, God would have been really mad at demons and would have done something to destroy them. But what it turns out is God's mad at people. And in this case, the people, if you take that interpretation, they would have just been victimized. But the whole thing comes down to, beginning with verse 5, the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. So the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping thing and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. So this sets the stage. First of all, God says, people are so messed up, they're destroying each other. And mankind is going to be wiped out if something doesn't happen. God's so patient, though. He says, I'll give you 120 years to get your act together. I mean, what a 120-year warning? But that's what he says. But then he explains, the people that he had created are going to destroy themselves because they're killing each other, you know, just rampantly. And so he's like, I may have to do something to save humanity, and it may involve destroying most of them. Now, that sounds like, well, that's not logical. But if people are bad, and there was only one good guy, and if bad people are killing other bad people, eventually the bad people are going to kill the good person. And when that happens, society is doomed, because ultimately there is no more thread of righteousness even possible. And so in their case, it goes way back to Cain and Abel killing each other. And after that, people just saw, wow, this is interesting. We can kill each other. And so in those days, perhaps even more so than today, the potential of mankind wiping itself out was very real. And so God ends up stepping into this and going, this is so disgusting, I'm going to have to do something radical. And so I'm going to save mankind by destroying the bulk of mankind. And not only that, I'm going to destroy most of the animals, but I'm going to preserve all the species of animals, as you know the story goes. Now, I don't know why he's picking on the animals, but he does. And I think that perhaps there are things that the story doesn't tell us about the role of animals in their sinful lifestyle. And, you know, I don't know. You can use your imagination. It could be that people were worshiping the animals and that was a problem. I don't know. But at any rate, God desperately needs to step into the picture to fix this. But I want to call your attention before we get into the story to verse 6. Describes God's emotions at a time when he saw how bad things were on the earth, and all their thoughts were bad, and they were just constantly evil. The Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. And down at the end of verse 7, I am sorry that I even made them. Now, usually when people teach this, they'll just discount this. They'll be like, nah, God couldn't be sorry because he's perfect and he knows everything. And so often I hear people teaching on this passage and they say, that's an anthropomorphism. Now, an anthropomorphism, which comes from morph, which means a physical form, and anthropos, which is mankind, there are times in the Bible when the Bible uses a physical description of God in order to describe God in a way that we will understand him, and that's an anthropomorphism. For instance, God spreads his wings over the people that he loves, or the eyes of God move to and fro, or the hand of God was on him, or so on. We understand this is a figure of speech. It's an anthropomorphism. Now, in this case, it's nothing physical, so it really isn't an anthropomorphism. If anything, it would be an anthropopathism, which is to take human emotion and feeling and impute it to God in order to explain it. But how about this? How about we just believe what God says about himself? If God says he was sorry, that he had mixed emotions about even having made people, and we're created in his image, we're capable of these kind of emotions. Do you really think it's a sin to feel? Do you really think it's a sin to be going, I mean, come on, you who have had kids, wasn't there a time when you go, man, I don't even know if I should have done this or not? You know, you don't kill your kids, but you feel that way. So the way I look at it, God is in a position, God who's undoubtedly more sensitive than we are. Now, I believe that God knows the future, nothing surprises him, all that stuff too. But I also believe that he tells the truth. I'm amazed at people who totally believe the whole story of the ark, but right here they don't believe that God could feel something like this. I see a God who was just torn, a God who looked at the situation going, I love these people, and I love this planet. I remember what it was like when I made it. But they're going to kill themselves. They're going to wipe out society. And as a result, the promises that I've made to bring from the seed of Eve somebody who will destroy Satan, that is being jeopardized by the way that things are. God, when he did this, did not find it easy. It was hard. It was emotional for him. He felt. When you feel, that's a part of the image of God that even allows you to do that. I mean, animals don't have such feelings. They don't make plans for the future. They don't really get that disappointed in things. This is something that the Bible says God was that way. So here you have it. You have one good guy left. That's it. How do you save humanity for the future? How do you do that? How is it that you will ever be able to have a culture created that could then, God could be born into that culture and become one of us, ultimately live a perfect life and die for us, and then crush the head of Satan forever? You can't do that without people. And so God had to do something desperate, and his solution was what we call the flood. And so he talks to Noah and he says, I have grace on you. You're the only good guy left. So what I want you to do, you got to understand this. You need to build a boat. And you need to make it so big that every species of animal can be included on it. And you and your wife and your kids' wives are going to then be put on that boat. A flood's going to cover the earth. And ultimately, you will start society all over again, just with you, because you're the only one I have left. Now, we don't know how. We know that when God said, you have 120 years, and then it's over. So that must have been about the time that he spoke to Noah, which Noah would have been at the time about 480 years old. It was another 20 years before Noah had his first kid at Ham at the age of 500. We'll talk about that later. Don't let that throw you off too much. So he would have had as much as 120 years to build a boat, or as little as 40, 50 years, could have done it easily. 2 Peter chapter 2 tells us that he was a preacher. So Noah's building a boat, and he's preaching to people. Now, you know, a lot of times as a pastor, you preach and it seems like nobody really gets it, and it can be kind of frustrating. Imagine preaching for 120 years and the only converts are your wife, your three boys, and their wives. And they may just be going along for the cruise. Who knows? We don't know what their heart was. And one of them was definitely questionable. But so he begins to build the ark. Now, we look as this unfolds, and we see there later on in chapter 6, kind of the design of the ark. Here are the instructions that God gave him. And God said in verse 13, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark. Cover it inside and outside with pitch. Seal it really good. And this is how you shall make it. Here's the plans for the ark. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits. A cubit's about 18 inches, so that's like 450 feet long. It says, and the width, 50 cubits, 75 feet wide. And the height, 30 cubits, 45 feet high. You shall make a window for the ark, and you shall finish it to a cubit from above and set the door of the ark in its side. You shall make it with lower, second, and third decks. And behold, I myself am bringing floodwaters on the earth to destroy them from under heaven. All flesh in which is the breath of life, everything that's on the earth is going to die. Everything that isn't in the ark. Now, it's interesting. Experts have looked at this and said, if you wanted to make a vessel that big to survive this kind of storm, this is a really good plan for it. This is an optimal size. Now, there are other creation myths that are out there, like the Babylonians had an ark, you know, a myth of an ark, but theirs was a cube. Can you imagine being in stormy waters and it's just, whoa, and it's just flipping over? That's a made-up story. This is something that very practically could actually work. Now, you go, but wait a minute, boats usually have a front and a tail and a sail, and no, they weren't going anywhere. They didn't need to navigate. They just needed to survive. So God says, here's what I want you to do. And so Noah begins to build this ark. Now, right away, you might go, this sounds crazy. How in the world? Because God says, take two of every animal, every species, and put them in the ark. And then later he says, oh, and get seven pairs of clean animals and birds, because later they would be used for sacrifices and perhaps for food as well. So you go, that doesn't sound very plausible. Well, think about it. With these sizes, three decks, you have over 100,000 square feet of floor space and fairly high ceilings. They could be stacked. They could be in layers. So ultimately, though, the people have calculated that the capacity, the space of the ark is about the same as like 586 railroad boxcars. That's a lot. You could put this many animals. When they take and calculate how many animals was this, actually two of each kind, seven of some, you go, how many species are there? Well, even speculating, now a lot of species exist in the water just fine, so the vast majority of species wouldn't need to be in the ark, but the ones that would, somebody has estimated that about 50,000 animals at the max. That means if every extinct species that we know was included, and they said that for all of those, the space they would take would be about 37% of the ark, essentially one floor. Now, of course, also, you're not going to bring, if you're going to go, okay, I need two elephants, you're not going to get the biggest elephants, you're going to get baby elephants. If there's an animal that comes in an egg, you're going to take the eggs. Now, also, there are people who study genetics who say that most species have within it the traces of a capacity to hibernate. And it's just that over time, that hasn't been necessary. So God could have put all these animals to sleep. They're going to need a lot less to eat and everything like that. There are all sorts of possibilities. This is not ridiculous. This is not, I mean, if they take up about a third of the ark, the food takes up another third and provides a layer between all the refuse in the bottom floor with the animals and where the people live up on the top. The people are going to have more room on the ark than any of us have in our houses. And so this sounds realistic. It really could be, I believe. You don't have to believe it, but it makes sense. If you were going to do something like this, this is exactly the way you could do it.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. We're recalling the story of the flood today on The Balanced Word. Here's Pastor Dave with more from Genesis chapter 7.
Chapter 7, verse 11, it says, "In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, on that day all the fountains of the great deep were broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened." Now remember, in our creation account, we saw this massive of water that was then separated to create the atmosphere. And it says that the firmament was the space between the water and the water. So now if that starts busting up, can you imagine the moisture, the rain that could have poured on them at this point? And if the windows of heaven really were open. Now look over at verse 17. "Now the flood was on the earth 40 days. The waters increased and lifted up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. The waters prevailed and greatly increased on the earth, and the ark moved about on the surface of the waters, and the waters prevailed exceedingly on the earth, and all the high hills under the whole heaven were covered. The waters prevailed 15 cubits, or, you know, 27 feet or so up above the height of the mountains. They were covered." So they get in a boat, bunch of animals, a lot of food, close the door. water is just pouring down. And it's a major, major flood where they're floating. And pretty soon, it's like there's no mountaintops left. We're actually up above the highest mountaintop. And this lasted. They stayed on the ark for a little over a year, if you add it all up.
We'll hear more about the flood and the hope to be found on the other side next time on The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Roth, a presentation of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play.